You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone, and it's Wins Above Fantasy, episode 138. Today is Thursday, May 9th on the podcast. If you guys are joining us on the live stream, welcome on Wednesday night. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli, and we got a special guest with us tonight. If you guys have been listening to the pod this year, might be a name that's familiar that we have been citing a lot as of late. So I'll tease that out a little bit, but we got a great show topic for the night. Steve and I talked, and we looked up and we said, it's been a minute since we've done pitchers. So tonight we are talking shopping for starting pitchers, which includes either under-rostered guys or underperforming pitching targets. So kind of some ads or buy lows, and we've got a great expert here to talk us through it. Steve, tell me how's it going for you out there? And then I want to let you introduce our guest tonight on the show, because you actually put our guest on my radar, and my Twitter feed is better for that. My fantasy outlook is better for that. But Steve, how's it going? Good to see you.
It's good. I'm the one battling an infant with an illness now. So if you hear a screaming 2-year-old in the background, she's having a little trouble sleeping, had a stomach bug, which was fun. Just hoping that the rest of us don't catch that in the household. So that's always fun. But yeah. Like you said, we usually do a good job of either alternating hitter and pitcher episodes or talking about both in some, but like somehow it got away from us in like the last three or four episodes were without pitchers, and it kind of hit me like, what's the best way to do that and bring that on? It's the guy that we've been quoting the most for all of our pitcher stats, being we are a pitcherless podcast, other than like Nick and all that too. But that's Thomas Nestico at TJ Stats. If you're on Twitter at all and follow fantasy baseball, you know who at TJ Stats is. He does amazing breakdowns of pretty much every start, every night, everything you want to see. Has his own Stuff Plus metric that's, you know, up there with guys like Eno Saris and Lance Prodowski, the guys that quote all these things, reference TJ all the time, or Thomas all the time. So a pleasure to have you on, Thomas. Thanks for joining us. If we're going to talk pitching, I'm glad it's with you. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and Thomas, you guys can follow him on Twitter at TJ Stats. Also, his Patreon is patreon.com/TJ_stats. So definitely go out there. But Thomas, tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you kind of got into fantasy baseball, and where they can find your work.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm born and raised in Toronto. I grew up as a Blue Jays fan my entire life. I also a pretty big hockey fan as well. I'm not a Leafs fan, though. I've learned the hard way not to follow
Smart.
Those guys. but yeah, I guess ever since a young age, I've just followed sports, kind of fell in love with them. I'm also a civil engineer, so I have that background in maths and sciences. So as I grew up older, learned a bit more about programming languages, even simpler things like Excel, just to make visualizations, graphs, and then learning through my book just on my own and throughout my university, learning different applications and programming languages to kind of mesh my love of sports for my interest in math and sciences and kind of blend them together to work with data analytics. And I've just been learning throughout, the past few years or so. And I just like sharing the insights and helping other people understand as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating. The statistics background and kind of the data visualization is really cool. One thing that kind of catches my eye is the fact that you can kind of make these charts and easy to read, easy to understand. Me being in the marketing world, that's always like the number one thing of like, all right, I got all this data and metrics, but like, how do we make sense of it? One thing I wanted to hear you talk about was the TJ Stuff metric. And Steve, I'm sure you've got some overview questions before we jump into plenty of names. But Thomas, could you talk to us a little bit about the TJ Stuff, if there's anything unique about it, maybe to other ones in the industry, or just how you've kind of concocted that when it comes to pulling some some breakout pitchers.
Yeah, so the stuff metric, you've probably seen it floating around. Eno Saris is the most popular one. It takes the pitch characteristics, so the physical characteristics of a pitch, such as its velocity, its movement, its spin rate, even like release points. And some models, my model doesn't use it, but some model use like the approach angle of a pitch to kind of predict an expected run value for that pitch. So kind of how we differ in compared to other models would kind of just be the methodology behind it. Like there's different algorithms we can use, different types of machine learning models, as well as how we quantify the expected run values. I have two articles actually on Medium. You can find them again, my name, Thomas Nestico, both modeling TJ Stuff Plus. And then actually earlier this week, I released kind of the update to it, modeling TJ Stuff Plus version 2.0. So kind of it works through all that. And what I like to look for in stuff metrics are kind of helps capture, because again, I can't look at every single picture at once. And again, some metrics kind of like ERA are, again, you can't really use those to kind of see the true value of a pitcher, but something like Stuff Plus can help us make more of a predictive metric, see what pitchers are maybe not performing that well, but have good underlying metrics to go beyond that, more than something, say, fielder independent pitching, Sierra, or even something like K minus ball percentage.
I love it. Steve, I want to open it up in case you have high level questions before we get into the show, the topic tonight, and also launch into some names here, which will be exciting.
No, yeah, that sort of is exactly why I was interested there too. But I guess from my perspective, like, when did you notice that, like, okay, I'm onto something here, like, with either, you know, your game recaps that get so popular, the Stuff Plus metric that you have. When was this something that you realized, like, hey, like, there are people that care about this? And, you know, obviously it's a big industry. There's, you know, a million podcasts on this network alone. A lot of people care about fantasy baseball, but it's hard to stand out in the way that you have. I guess sort of what has led you to that sort of growth in popularity, and when did you realize sort of, hey, I'm onto something here with these game recaps, these stuff metrics, whatever it was that sort of, you know, gave you that inspiration to keep on doing this? Because it's it could be a humbling industry at times.
Yeah. So like last year, I kind of used Eno's Stuff Plus metric to create similar pitch summaries, or I guess pitching summaries. But with that, I had to wait until the next day to post it. And by the time then, like, people aren't as, I guess, excited about a performance or whatnot. Say, earlier this year, there was Renato Blanco's no-hitter. The way I set it up this year using my own model, I can quickly, like, immediately after the game, like, not even 30 seconds after the game, I can generate the image and then just share it. And I got a lot of positive feedback from it. I started sharing them in spring training, working through it, kind of refining it a bit, I guess, a bit more intuitive layout. Something I just find a bit more appealing to look at than the one I had last year. So again, I can generate these really quickly. So something like Mason Miller today, him getting those two innings, lowering his field independent pitching to negative 0.16. It's still in the negatives. It's crazy, but people love seeing just a pitcher's performance, like, just spit out quantified. Again, you can see the similar metrics on Baseball Savant. But again, you can either see like a one graph at a time or just the table. But I feel that my graphics both look nice and also kind of have the data that you want.
It sums everything up super clean. And you do agree. Like, Chris Sale's, the game's not even over, right? As soon as he came out and his start line was finished, I saw that before, you know, 5 minutes before we went on air, that was out there with his line. And you're right. There is so much great data out there. But you kind of have to piece it together and know what you're looking for. And for someone like me who's on Baseball Savant literally 24/7, it is always a tab open on my screen, like I'm sure you guys are too. But there's still things that you kind of don't, oh, hey, where was that? Like, what do I have to do to pull this up again? So it is a great job that you do that sums it all together nicely. And we'll pull up some later on the stream sort of as a tease here. But, you know, there's the Arsenal breakdown, the percentage breakdown, the stuff plus the locations. It's everything you need. If you need a quick recap of how a pitcher did and what a pitcher threw and how their stuff was looking, be sure to give TJ Stats a follow, because there is nothing better for a quick, insightful summary for those there. So, yeah, shout out to those breakdowns. Yep. They are awesome.
Yep. Shout out to you as well, Steve, for getting TJ and on the show in terms of talking point, but also bringing Thomas on tonight. It's great to meet you. And for our listeners, you guys got to follow Thomas at TJ Stats. I think the immediacy that you guys are talking about and the consistency of these page snapshots, really, where it's, you know, the splits versus lefties and righties, which you start to get a better feel for how pitchers actually attack batters, not just the single stats in a vacuum. You start to get a little bit more complete picture of you know, how they're attacking hitters, which is what it's all about. So definitely go out and follow Thomas. And with that said, guys, we got the show topic ahead, which, again, under-rostered or underperforming pitchers. We've got a handful of things we pulled that we're looking at, but more traditional rundown stuff. So buy low pitching targets, stuff plus, looking at guys who are available in 50 to 75% of Yahoo leagues, looking at stuff like K-minus BB. And also, it seems like there's been a lot of outings in the past 48 hours that we want to talk about, because these guys are pretty relevant. It's that time of year where the ads seem like they are early enough to make a huge impact, but also late enough to where we've got a decent sample size. And before we get to all the names that are kind of worth adding and available in 12 teams and beyond, I think we got to start, guys, with Paul Skeens, who the news just came out that he gets the call. He's going to start against the Cubs on Saturday. And yeah, Skeens, I mean, he's got the popularity, of course. He's got, you know, not a bad looking gal, and across 27 innings in AAA, a 43% K rate, which is really the eye opener. A fastball slider combo that is the reason why he was the number one overall pick. And yeah, the Pirates, other than possibly limiting the innings, have all the reasons to kind of let him loose with what's kind of an exciting, scrappy staff all of a sudden in Pittsburgh. So Paul Skeens, penny for both of you guys' thoughts, but let's start with you, Thomas. What are you seeing with Skeens, and what do you think we can expect early on here for the debut?
Yeah, there was a reason why he was drafted first overall last year. He's one of the most hyped pitching prospects we've seen in recent memory, probably the most hyped since Steven Strasburg and that absolutely pandemonium when he was coming up. But yeah, Skeens, he has arguably five plus pitches, or at least above average pitches. The fastball, I do think my model kind of underrates it. He averages 100 miles an hour on it. The shape isn't too great on it. You could kind of classify it as a dead zone fastball. But again, when you're throwing it 100 miles an hour with solid command, it's pretty just tough to even hit it at all at 100 miles an hour. But if he's able to locate it like he has in AAA this year, he's going to have fantastic results. Again, the slider, as you mentioned, kind of pretty fantastic pitch as well. Kind of has a nice wide range of movement profile. So maybe you can kind of classify it as two different pitches. But again, high velocity slider, sometimes big movement, sometimes small movement. Again, another fantastic pitch. He's been toying with a splinker, he calls it. So kind of a mix between a sinker and a splitter, but it's a splitter that goes 95 miles an hour. And again, also has fantastic results this season. There was one start, I think it was last week, he just threw, I think, more splitters than maybe almost as much as he threw as his fastball, kind of just tinkering with it, just, I don't know, fitting into his arsenal. Again, he did, as he's throwing a lot more of those pitches, it's likely he's going to get more walks or whatnot. It's a little harder to control. But again, just seeing him still use that pitch, maybe not with the best command, and have fantastic results is very encouraging to see. Again, 95 mile an hour splitters don't really grow on trees. And that movement profile is going to be pretty crazy. And again, the changeup and curveball also weave in a few times. But yeah, Paul Skeens, he's the number one pitching prospect for a reason. His numbers in college, his numbers in AAA, every level he's pitched at, he's just looked absolutely phenomenal. And I'll be excited to watch him on Saturday. And immediately share his results.
Yeah, yeah. For context, the Kevin Gausman splitter is 10 miles per hour behind that at 85. Steve, what do you think about Skeens? I know, obviously, there's excitement, but anything you want to add ahead of the big debut before we get to some other names here?
Yeah, we got Thomas's awesome pitching summary up on the screen for those on the live stream. You can see why those graphics are so useful and so nice and easy to look at with a bunch of information. Yeah, I did want to hit on what Thomas mentioned quickly about the fastball, that it could be qualified as sort of a dead zone fastball. And I remember when he first made a few starts last year after he was drafted, there was kind of a bit of a panic in the industry because, like, people saw like a low IVB and movement that wasn't great for a fastball, even though it was 100 miles an hour. And there was a bit of, like, I don't want to say it was like a dip in his prospect or hype, but there was some concern. And I guess, you know, with the recent results of Hunter Green having a fastball that's really great velocity but doesn't have the best results, there was a lot of comps there. But I think that there's a big difference between someone like Hunter Green and Paul Skeens, and the fact that, you know, he does have five pitches, like Thomas said. He does have better command. Mm-hmm. And even the individual characteristics of that fastball, Lance Brodowski did a great video on Paul Skeens last week breaking down his arsenal and talked about how there's four characteristics that he looks at in a fastball, and that's velocity, movement, release point, and command. And if you're elite at three of those things, he doesn't really care about what the fourth one, it's still probably going to be a good pitch. So just because it doesn't have the greatest shape or movement doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad pitch. Like, Paul Skeens is really good at everything else. He throws it 100. He's really tall and throws from like a sidearm sort of slot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the extension may not look great, but it's not necessarily apples to apples for someone who's like over the top, who, you know, wants to get that fastball that like jumps and pops at you late to get that rise. So I think that was sort of overblown, and just the fact that he has five pitches, and he does tweak the slider, I believe, between lefties and righties. He threw more of a sweeper in college. That's kind of gone away, but he does, you know, even stand on different sides of the rubber versus lefties and righties. So he does do a bunch of different things that, you know, some of the surface stats may not pick up. So, yeah, I'm super excited for him on Saturday. It's just incredible that two of the best young pitchers are on the same team, arguably the two best ones, and Paul Skeens and Jared Jones. Jared Jones is going Friday, and then Paul Skeens is going Saturday. Like, man, that is awesome.
It is. It is. And I think the question for, I guess, rest of season is just with the, will they handle it with the kid gloves? I know that there's already reports that they're going to do an innings limit. It looks like projections have them at like anywhere from, let's see, ATC's got like 84 innings rest of season, Steamer up at 93. He's already got 27 so far. So that sounds about right, of like landing around 120, 125, something like that. So yeah, that's Paul Skeens. Very excited. And I think for the purposes of this show, he's much more rostered than any of the other guys that we're going to get to. But with that said, let's move to our second one. Another rookie, and this one out in your territory, Steve. It's Christian Scott, who came up after basically, I know you called out in the rundown, Steve, interesting story on how Christian Scott got here, a relief pitcher in Florida, crowded rotation. The Mets are stretching him out. Had his first start with quite a prospect buzz. I know he was a priority ad in a lot of industry leagues. He's been stashed in my home league for a minute. But on his first start on May 4th over the weekend, 6 2/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, just 1 walk and 1 earned run. So Christian Scott, there's I've heard things back and forth. If you're listening to Eric Samolsky and Nick Pollock this week, they were kind of debating it, and Eric was very excited about Christian Scott and the ceiling. Nick was a little concerned that against lefties, he might not have the stuff because the splitter's not great. He just goes with the fastball. He doesn't really throw the slider to lefties. So would love to hear a little bit of the debate here, because just 36% rostered, I think this one's more actionable. And I think a lot of people are probably in that 36% camp, hoping that they found themselves an ace. But Steve, we'll start with you this time. Your thoughts on Christian Scott?
Yeah, shout out to Dan W. who wanted us to talk about Christian Scott this week. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I watched that whole start. I think it was on Saturday. He got into trouble early. I think it was second and third with no outs, and worked himself out of trouble with the strikeout. I think a double play was in there too. So like it could have gone off the rails very, very quickly. And I think he retired like 12 or 13 in a row after that. And just like, you know, very soft analysis, not to get into the stuff or anything, but just looked calm out there and dealing with some of the pressures. Like there was no adrenaline fall off from, you know, that major league bump that you get from your first inning or whatever like that. The fastball looked really good. The sweeper looked awesome. And it was just a pretty impressive start all around. I did throw out some big bids on him in NFBC leagues. I think I got him in one league. I think I've got him in our listener league, Van, for like $240. I had some other 220, 230 bids. I think in TGFBI I had like a 271 that was like the third runner up, or I wasn't even the second runner up, so I was close, but you know, there were some hefty bids out there. You know, I don't know if it's like, I don't feel like it's like a Jared Jones type of thing. I don't feel that good, but I still feel he could have value for the rest of the season. And I wanted to throw this up, this graphic here with his release points. If you're watching on the stream, this was being talked about in the Pitcher List Discord yesterday, and it was tweeted out by Matt Brownstein, M. Brownstein 89. He's a writer for the New York Post and Metsmerized, Matthew Brownstein, and it's just a graphic of his release points and how close all of these release points are. And it's a good reason why his fastball is good, because it just, you know, is hard to pick up out of the hand. The other release point that looks like this, and sort of to describe it for those just on the podcast, it's just a bunch of dots all overlapping each other, and you can't really differentiate between separation from where the ball is released, and that makes it harder for hitters to pick up. And I'm not trying to make this comparison or say that he's this guy, but the other one, the other starter that had a similar plot like this of release point was Jacob DeGrom, and that's what made his
tunneling and everything.
Yeah, his tunneling, right? Even better. Obviously, DeGrom threw 100 with insane command and some of the best command that made him different, but that was just, this is just one of the characteristics that make Christian Scott an interesting arm in my book.
Well, next Friday he's got Atlanta, so it's our tougher test, but yeah. I'm curious.
Or tomorrow. So wait for,
I'm sorry, yeah,
Thursday,
tomorrow. Yes. Yeah. So Thomas, your thoughts on Christian Scott?
Yeah, I do think some of the concerns about left-handed batting are valid. His splitter didn't have the greatest results in AAA this season against left-handed hitters, but he was able to locate that slider in on the hands of lefties. So a very high chase rate and a whiff rate against them. But if he is missing that slider, leaving in the zone a bit too much, it's likely it will get hit hard. But again, that start on Saturday was very encouraging to see. He got 18 whips. His fastball looked very lively. Even just throwing it in the middle of the zone, in the heart of the zone, Rays batters just couldn't make any contact with it. Very encouraging to see that as well. The sweeper graded out really well in my TJ Stuff Plus metric. So against right-handed hitters, he really shouldn't have too much of an issue against them. But yeah, lefties is definitely the thing to watch for him. But you couldn't really ask for a better first career start. I know the Rays, they've been kind of fumbling lately, but again, they do have some pretty pretty strong hitters on that team. And Scott went in, again, kind of went through kind of a rough first inning, gave him a few hits, but again, he locked in. It was 12 straight retired, and then kind of ended on a high note. And he's, again, he's one of my favorite pitching prospects. Kind of, I definitely rose up the ranks last year. A lot of buzz around him this spring training. He's looked fantastic, again, at AAA this year as well. So just, again, a great pitching prospect. And I'm excited to see how he does against Atlanta. Because, again, yeah, they're a tough team, but I think he's up for the task.
Yeah, tough test. And there's been some surprisingly good results against Atlanta. Although Atlanta hasn't been Nick Pivetta.
They did get it for five runs. Atlanta has been scuffling a little bit off it. Like, they're still good.
Olson struggling. Acuna's
and
slow on power.
I think I'm more the fact that he may seem more susceptible to lefties, Christian Scott, that is. There's just really Olson in that lineup. I know Kelnick's a lefty. Albie's a switch hitter, but he's much better from the right side. I think what would be more of a test, and that's what Christian Scott's second start would be, or third start, and that's at Philadelphia with guys like Schwarber and Harper. So that may be more of a test. So it's not easy. I have him in a lot of places. I'm not going to not start a guy that I just spent $270 on in a league, right? So I did roll him out versus Atlanta. We'll see. It's a tough test. And they do have McGill, who just had a solid rehab start, I think, on Tuesday. He has another one on Saturday. Tyler McGill, that is. Senga's back at the end of the month. So there is some potential, you know, not necessarily because
annoyance.
Because of his performance being sent down, but just with the Mets rotation getting a bit more crowded, even though he still probably is one of their five best starters, considering he is a rookie, I wouldn't be surprised if there was sort of an extended stint down in the minors around the All-Star break to sort of limit his innings and maybe push his innings back towards the later of the year, especially with the Mets hanging around 500 and having some wild card dreams here in early May. But yeah, I think it's fair to be excited about Christian Scott. Maybe not on the Skeens level, or definitely not on the Skeens level, but there's still a lot to like there.
Well, we're walking it down the staircase here, because the next one I think would probably be beneath both of them on the stuff models. But Reese Olson is one that we were very excited about last year. He had that incredible August, if you remember, where it was like 31 strikeouts and 20 innings or something. This season had some buzz coming in, and you know, for the start of the year, I guess didn't look amazing, but now he's slowly accumulated enough volume to start today as we record on Wednesday at Cleveland. Six innings, just four strikeouts, but only one earned run and two walks. Now he's up to 39 in the third innings pitched, a 2.52 ERA, 35 strikeouts, so a little bit under that strikeout per inning, a 1.12 whip, and just 24% rostered on Yahoo. So, Thomas, I want to start back with you on this one. For Reese Olson and the Tigers, what do we see here? Because I feel like he's kind of flashed moments of being like a stuff high strikeout guy with that slider, but then where are the surface level K per inning? But overall, you can't really complain about the results. So I'm dying to hear your take on Reese Olson.
Olson has had a pretty good start to the season. I liked him last year. He was limiting walks. The slider was definitely a fantastic pitch. It graded out very well in a lot of models. It also just looks amazing when you're watching it. But he does have a kind of a fastball problem, his forcing fastball. He doesn't have the velocity. It doesn't have the shape either. Again, it grades up very poorly in my TJ Stuff Plus models at 92. It's had pretty poor results this year in terms of chase rate and whiff rate. And he kind of isn't commanding it too well either. It's kind of living in the heart of the zone, which you don't want to really see with any pitch, but especially not a fastball with characteristics like that. To counter lefties, I guess he has that changeup, which has had some pretty fantastic results this year, a 51% whiff rate on that changeup. But again, if he doesn't have, he can't always throw that changeup. He always has to have weave in some fastballs with it as well. And if batters are sitting on his fastball, waiting for him to make a mistake, they can definitely hit it hard. Against righties, definitely has a better answer against them. He has that really good slider. And also a sinker, which he's exclusively uses to righties. Both have good results this season. The slider, again, I mentioned before, is the great pitch, which comes with a 42% whiff rate this year. And the sinker is helps him induce those ground balls. And he's had pretty good command of it as well. But again, the only kind of downside I'm seeing of Olsen is that fastball. Without a more, I guess, well-established fastball, the whiff rate will remain low. The K rate probably won't be as high as we hope. And if his command starts to falter, he'll definitely fall into some dire straits, have a bad outing here or there. But yeah, his strikeout rate is okay. But his walk rate, if he can lower it to what it was last year, it'd definitely be more encouraging to see.
Yeah, Steve, I want your thoughts too, but to segue a tweet I saw from Chris Castellani at Castellani 2014. Reese Olsen, since August 28th of last year, 13 starts, a 2.06 ERA, a 1.03 WHIP. It's kind of crazy when you look at it like that. And while the K's haven't been there, the ground ball rate is up. So it's just like, you know, who is this pitcher? Are you kind of buying or selling Reese Olsen as a undroppable pitcher throughout the season in like 12, 14 teams?
I have a soft spot for Reese Olsen. I think we talked about him a ton last year.
He's on my home league roster. Yeah,
he's
so
on my home
that.
League roster. He's someone that I added for a stream, I think a few starts ago, and I just haven't let go. So he has been sort of undroppable for me. Like even through the Yankees, like he held his own in that last start prior to the one that went off on today or Wednesday. Yeah, and you watch that slider, you watch that changeup. It's like, why isn't this guy striking out more batters? Like, it's one of the best sliders in the league, and always grades out that way, I think, on most stuff metrics, too. And even, like Thomas said, just watching it, it's just so impressive. The changeup, too, just looks nasty when he throws it and can command it. But, yeah, it is a bad fastball. But what is interesting, like you said, that amazing August that he had, he threw the fastball the lowest percentage of his career for that month at 24.7%. And this year, it's around 25, 26%. So
interesting.
In June, it was at 32%. In July, it was at 30%. And it's really hovered around that 25% since August of last year. And sort of it's something that we look for, and it's analysis that's not breaking news or mind-shattering or not, but when you throw your better pitchers more and your worst pitches less, like, you're going to have better results. And it's that seems like an adjustment that Reese Olsen has consciously made. So I'm encouraged, and he's sort of been a guy that I had maybe like Toby expectations for, to quote Nick Pollock, like a back end of the guy, rotation guy that just sticks around that you may drop here and there. But there may be a little bit more upside for that for Reese Olsen. Like, you know, I watched that full start today versus Cleveland, like, and he looked pretty good. The K's weren't there, and Cleveland's a great offense this year so far. Rates and Barrels has also talked about how at Cleveland has been one of the most hitter-friendly environments. Cleveland chopped off a part of their stadium, the top part of their stadium, so there's now a new, like, wind factor in there. So if you look at, like, one-year park factor metrics, it's a really hitter-friendly environment that the three-year standard park factors may not pick up. So for him to have that start today against one of the best offenses in the league and one of the toughest places to pitch, at least this year, it's impressive. Yeah, it may not ever get to like that 27% strikeout rate that we love to see from true high-end fantasy starters, even like, you know, your 1-3 fantasy starters. But I think it could be good enough. And like Thomas said, like, if he can get that walk rate down towards what it was last year, then I think that could lead to somewhere where he's considered, like, you know, this is a guy that I'm not dropping. sort of thing for Reese Olsen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like he's making the right tinkering moves, and just 24 years old. You like to see he's kind of a pitcher's pitcher in that way. I'd love to see the ground ball rate stay, but yeah, man, that slider 15th in the league, 15th of all pitches in the league in CSW. And yeah, we'll see if he can defy kind of the basic logic that you need a fastball in this league to be a good starter. I know some names like Wasker and Noah have fallen by the wayside with like a slider first mentality. So we'll see if Reese Olsen
he's got at least another pitch too, right? It was just the fastball and the slider for Noah, right? Yeah.
Very much so. Yep, you're right. So we got a handful of other names, guys, but we have to take our first ad break and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so this one can probably be a little bit quicker, Thomas, because we got a lot of names, and some of them, admittedly, are a little bit more interesting than J.P. Sears of the Oakland Athletics. But I did want to pull up, you know, he had just caught my eye checking box scores that he had strung a handful of starts, good starts together, and seeing Mike Kirlin's tweet, I thought it was noteworthy to throw him in the rundown here. Kirlin says on Twitter, which of course you guys should be following Mike Kirlin at @Mike_Kirlin with K, K-U-R-L-A-N-D. First two starts of the season at Detroit and then versus Cleveland. J.P. Sears had an 8.68 ERA and a 7.5% swinging strike rate. In the five starts since then, which included at Texas, at the Yankees, at Baltimore, and then, you know, your duds with the Cardinals and the Marlins, don't get Steve started. But in those five starts, J.P. Sears has had a 2.40 ERA, and that swinging strike rate had jumped from 7.5% up to 12.3%, which is solid. But just curious, Thomas, is there anything to see here, or is J.P. Sears just a Toby, as the pitcherless folks say, and there's nothing really interesting for fantasy purposes?
Sears is a very interesting pitcher. His lowest grading pitch is his fastball, but you could argue that it's actually his best pitch. It has a very low approach angle. So again, and if he's able to locate it high in the zone, it'll return a lot of whips. But again, it's he leaves a lot of his pitches in the zone. He may be attacking batters a bit too much with those offerings. So that's why you won't see his whip rate too high. Again, a 12.3 swinging strike rate is solid, but again, it's not particularly anything special. Again, he leaves his, he's a sweeper, 56% zone rate, changeup, 46% zone rate. So he's just leaving a lot of the pitches inside the zone. It's kind of challenging batters to hit it. So again, he's getting decent results there. Again, they're typically tougher pitches to hit, depending on the count and how he's using and where he's locating them. But I wouldn't expect his strikeout rate to be any high. I would expect that the walk rate to remain kind of where it's at right now. But again, if he's filling the zone with all his pitches pretty much and leaving fastballs high in the zone, he'll be susceptible to home runs. Today he let up two. But again, Sears, he could be, I guess, as you mentioned, like a Toby, a back end option, maybe against a weaker opponent, not a team like Texas today. But he did kind of handle, he handled Texas a few weeks back, the Yankees in Baltimore. But again, his arsenal kind of, it kind of works, but again, it is susceptible to some pretty strong offenses if he's going to leave all his pitches just available to be in the zone. And if he misses his spot, it's going to be not good news for him.
Yeah, it would be an anomaly, it seems, just from looking at the typical stuff we look at, for him to be anything more than a Toby. But yeah, it can be kind of the Vargas rule, as we say, of like if you do stream and it goes well, you know, ride it till the wheels come off, and then probably not a ton of heartburn moving on. But for us to move on, Steve, want to get
the guy you want to stream at home, right? At least,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
For even like the decent offenses, you know, I would think twice about Texas today, even though it wasn't too bad. But pretty much any non-elite offense, I would start J.P. Sears at home.
Yeah, just kind of a ratio stabilizer for like some of those deeper industry leagues. Totally agree. Yeah. Steve, talk to me about Hayden Wesneski. Similar to Reese Olsen, he was a name that had some buzz last year for swing and miss stuff, but we're not really seeing it this year. Across 22 and two-thirds innings, just 17 strikeouts. That said, the ratios have been great. Like Olsen, a 1.59 ERA, a 0.88 whip. And yeah, now started today against the Padres, got the quality start. It wasn't perfect with only three strikeouts and six and change innings. But what do you think about Wesneski here, Steve? Just 20% rostered in the NL Central. Do you think this is a fantasy, SP6, or is this just kind of waiver wire fodder?
I loved Hayden Wesneski coming into 2023. I think he was probably one of my more rostered pitchers, and that did not work out well. I think by this time last year, he was sent down to the minors, and I don't know if he came back up other than the first few starts, maybe towards the end of the year out of the bullpen. I think Wesneski was there. But, yeah, it's a really, really good sweeper, and that's what I fell in love with. And it looks pretty good since he moved to the bullpen. He earned that third start today. But I think I tend to lean towards what Nick Pollock's analysis was on him, in that it's hard to trust a guy that's rooted in just one really good breaking ball. Because when the feel for that breaking ball isn't there, it's going to be a bad outing. Maybe he's matured enough to the point where when the breaking ball isn't actually elite, it's more of a start like today where it's six innings, three runs, seven hits, three Ks, one walk, and you live with that. And that's when he can become some guy that you want to roster everywhere and don't drop. But until I see that consistently, I think he's more of a streamer to me rather than someone that I'm jumping out to go roster. And with at Atlanta next, I would keep him on the waiver wire despite three good strong starts in a row since he moved to the rotation.
Yep. Thomas, I want to go to you on the next guy, but do you have anything you'd want to add on Hayden Wesneski?
It seems like Wesneski and a bunch of Cubs pitchers like Steele and Assad, they have this Cubs philosophy of just trying to pitch to contact, weak contact. And I guess we're seeing it. It's been very effective for a lot of the Cubs pitchers. They're limiting hard contact. Wesneski is definitely one of the standouts as well. But it's just definitely interesting to see he's relying just on a sweeper and a four-seam pretty much, sometimes weaving in that cutter inside. But again, it's tough to, again, when you mentioned when Nick said living off just one really good sweeper, throwing it 40% of the time, and then again your other pitches aren't as great if that sweeper isn't kind of pristine, where you might be in for a rough start or two.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if any new pitcher on the Cubs just has to sit through like a 20-minute video that's like the Kyle Hendricks orientation video of just like not being a big stuff guy but somehow getting results that are eye-opening.
It's kind of working for them too, right? Like Assad, I know, doesn't have the greatest stuff, but he's gotten results now for like even into this year for most of last year too. I think Saris has talked about this a bunch, but maybe they have like a different stuff model or a different approach than like a lot of, what you would expect from that. But hey, it kind of works for them.
It does. Yeah. So that is Wesneski. Another youngster that I want to go back to you on, Thomas. Man, and this is wish casting because I have stashed Jack Leiter in my prospect slot. And just 15% rostered. He had his first start against Detroit. It was not good at all. Seven earned runs, 3 2/3 innings. Then he got sent back down. Then he got called up today, Wednesday, for the start at Oakland. And I didn't activate him yet. I actually didn't have room, but I was like, let's see him cook. I'll be happy I held on to him. And not great. The four innings, four earned runs, three strikeouts, so not seeing the swing and miss stuff. That said, I think most of the damage came off the long ball with two homers. I saw some mixed things, and maybe the silver lining, as somebody had pointed out on Twitter, is no walks for a guy who's been kind of erratic. Just curious from a stuff standpoint, Thomas, if you're seeing enough excitement for Jack Leiter to where you can justify dealing with these bumps in the road because there's something good on the other side, or if this is like, let him figure it out. Maybe we'll be back in a year or two for kind of your 12-14 team redraft leagues. What are your thoughts on Jack Leiter?
And Leiter, his stuff, again, last year was also really good. But this year as well, in AAA, he's had pretty great results. A 2.84 ERA, a 0.91 whip. He's got a 37% strikeout rate, and that's playing in the Pacific Coast League. Those are pretty fantastic results for the league like that. His fastball and slider definitely his two best pitches. Both could be classified as plus offerings. The fastball, he's able to locate it high in the zone. But again, if you're locating your fastball high in the zone and you miss your spot, batters can easily hit fly balls and most more likely than not hit home runs. That's kind of a similar thing that happened with Joe Ryan last year, his high fastball approach. He gave up about one home run per start. And depending on how the sequencing is working, it could either be hopefully it's a solo home run or multi-home run and just kind of ruin your outing.
Especially with like that today, walk rate. Yeah, with that normal walk rate. Oof.
Yeah, Leiter's walk rate. Again, his command has looked a bit better in AAA this year, but yeah, his command command grades as a prospect haven't been too great. His results in AA and the levels below that, again, not the greatest command. It looked like he had, again, better command today, but it might have just been more. He was, again, attacking the zone a lot. He had a 72% zone rate on that slider, which you kind of don't want to make your slider look too much in the zone, especially if it's not just on the edges of the zone. But looking at the stuff scores, his fastball graded out really well, had a fantastic 39% whiff rate, but he didn't get a whiff on any of his other pitches, which is not very encouraging to see. His slider and changeup both graded out well, but again, if they're living in the zone or if he's not able to get any chases, very low chase rate on both the slider and the changeup today, and again, no whiffs. I'm not sure he's like a hold in a redraft, but again, against a team like Oakland, he should hopefully have better results. But it seemed like he was, instead of being erratic, he was a bit more precise, and we don't really want it to live too much in the zone there. But his stuff does play, and hopefully as he develops further and hopefully has more starts, he can definitely hone in and kind of get that right approach.
It seems like I know there was a lot of talk over the offseason and throughout last year about him working on his mechanics to sort of regain that command and control. And it seems like he's done that. I think maybe the next step is pairing the ability to get swing and miss on his secondaries with that good command. Something that sort of Bryce Miller has like figured out through at least this year to start, and we sort of watched him go through that last year with that good fastball and good command of that fastball, and then sort of work to even find a secondary. Like, Leiter has the secondaries, it's just he hasn't unlocked the whiffs on them, at least to start. Maybe that's the next step, in the fact that, you know, he had to work so hard to adjust his mechanics to get that walk rate down and work through those command issues. Now maybe it's more about the control and placing those sliders outside the zone when he needs to, and changeups outside the zone when he needs to or on the edges. So maybe there's just like one more step for Leiter.
Yeah.
I streamed him for both starts that he came up. They were good matchups. One was at Detroit and at Oakland. Like, those are great streams on paper. And I've moved on from them both times, but I'm still very interested in Leiter long term.
Yeah, long term, I think so. Yeah, short term, it sounds like too many things that he's kind of got to tweak and get right. But yeah, it's a name for Dynasty that I would hold on to see if some starts look better in the next few.
Yeah, in Dynasty, absolute hold for me. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
a target even too. I would be, you know,
yeah,
if anyone's discouraged by this results, the service results. Yeah.
Well, somebody who has been rostered in plenty of leagues and the wait is over for them is Taj Bradley, who, as it's been announced, that he's got his start coming up Friday against the Yankees, and then next week at Boston. Taj Bradley rostered in 32% of Yahoo leagues. He's had two rehab starts so far. 11 innings pitched, a 39.5% K rate, which is very impressive. The around 8% walk rate, a sub one ERA. So looking really good for Taj Bradley after kind of a up and down last season. If you guys remember his first few starts, it was, you know, surface numbers were through the roof, but everyone was worried about under the hood. And then it's like it almost flipped around where people started to really like the stuff mm-hmm. under the hood, but the results didn't follow.
He was set down with like really good results, right? And they're like, yeah, he's got to work on his like cutter command.
They took him off
velocity.
A heater.
I was like, what? And then he like got rocked in AAA. Yeah.
Oh, and everybody was right, blaming yeah. him. Yeah. So, Thomas, would love to hear you talk about Taj Bradley. Still surprisingly available in 68% of leagues. What do you think of Bradley?
Bradley's results as 11 innings this year, as you mentioned, has been fantastic. The fastball living high in the zone, it might have burned him a bit last year. Ever since he got up to AAA in 2022, he's kind of had a home run problem, home run rate hovering around 2 home runs per 9, which definitely you don't want to see. But as you mentioned, last year, there was really nothing wrong with him. And then they sent him back down, and it seemed like everything just went south from there. He has 4 very strong pitches, the fastball, very good shape, the cutter and the splitter as well. So he has the splitter used against left-handed hitters. We actually struggled a lot versus righties last year. It might be that lack of put-away pitch he has against them. He doesn't have like a big moving slider or a big moving sweeper. But again, he has that cutter and curveball, so hopefully those kind of like kind of flesh out and become those offerings he can use to get out righties. But I'm interested in Bradley. His strikeout rate's fantastic so far. It's been great everywhere he's been. Hopefully he can keep the walks down. They were actually pretty good in check last year at the MLB level, but it seemed like as he went back down to AAA, kind of everything fell apart. Hopefully he regains his confidence, and I'm definitely excited to see him start.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, anything else to add on Bradley? I think I got like one share.
I have him stashed in a few leagues, and I'm excited. I think the K potential there is really, really exciting, and Shane Baz too. Another guy that, you know, sort of was the guy lining up Stuff Plus models a few years ago before he got hurt, you know, before the Mason Millers and Taj Bradleys of the world came along and had these amazing stuff numbers. The Rays rotation is about to get pretty exciting. I know Pepiot just went down, but I think it should be a short IL stint with a bruise, so excited for what the Rays are doing. And it's also, you know, I know that there's some debate on what makes a good pitching development organization, but the Rays always seem to get the most out of these guys one way or the other. So I'm excited to see Taj Bradley back. And, yeah, I mean, worth a shot. Like, be worth a shot in – I would imagine those numbers go up. And sort of as a caveat, a lot of these guys that we talked about started today. So these are all Yahoo roster percentages, and those Yahoo leagues are daily leagues, and they fluctuate a lot. So, like, when guys start, their rostership goes up a lot. Then, you know, so Jack Leiters, when I looked at this and pulled this, was like at 15%. That's going to drop down to, like, 2 or 3% after this start, especially since it wasn't great. So a lot of these guys may be guys that are dropped soon, depending on how the results went today. And I would imagine Bradley's goes up over the next 2 days, maybe closer to 50%. But I think you should be the people, you know, if you're listening to this, he's out there. I think it's worth a flyer for sure.
Totally agree. Yeah. I'm kind of a game log guy. I like last year, just looking through it, as I recall, there were some hot outings, and 6 different times he had 8 strikeouts or more, which I love to see. There was one outing where he had 11 Ks and 4 1/3 innings. Just like when he's on, it's kind of like what people were saying about Christian Scott. It's that, like, there's no savant slider for, like, having that dog in you where, like, the rhythm is there. You look fearless. you're just, like, attacking batters. And that's what I saw when I watched him live last year. So I'm very excited for Taj Bradley, and also just to see more about who this pitcher is, because I feel like we've just seen kind of a roller coaster, and the way that we've seen with some pitchers in the past, like Giolito or Chris Archer, who is on the Rays. So very excited for Bradley. That's on Friday.
First the Yankees, and then at Boston. So two, you know, it's a tough team at home.
Division.
Then yeah, a tough ballpark, but I think it's still worth it.
Yeah, that's the AL East. And, yeah, people might move on, like you said, Steve. So, all right, guys, we're going to get to two or three more names, but we got to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so, Steve, I'm going to let you just kind of look at the remaining ones here and pluck one out that you would like to talk about, because I don't think we'll have time for all of these. Why don't you pick a guy, and let's get Thomas's thoughts on him, because this is you know, our time is precious here of having our guest of honor. So who do you want to go with here?
Yeah, I'll throw up someone that Thomas threw up a graphic for and threw it in our little presentation here that we got. And that's Eric Fetty, a guy that someone that a lot of people have moved on from. He was a big drop last week after, you know, two really strong starts. He went 14.1 innings pitch with 20 strikeouts and no walks in his previous two starts. And then his last start at St. Louis, which, you know, man, that should have been a cakewalk. I mean, who doesn't pitch well at St. Louis? But Eric Fetty had five walks, five earned runs, and I think in a little over four innings. And a lot of people have moved on. You know, the underlying or the ERA indicators say, for the most part, he's earning that 3.46 ERA. Sure, the FIP is a little bit high, but the XFIP, Sierra, and XERA are all in line at like a 3.7 ERA. And I think that's kind of what you can expect from Fetty with a decent strikeout rate and a guy that isn't gonna kill you. Sure, he's not going to get a lot of wins pitching on the White Sox, but I think there is a lot to like here, and I kind of wanted to bring it up to get Thomas's thoughts, so I'll kick it over to him.
Fetty has a very unique pitch mix. Not too unique. It's like an east-west mix, but all the pitches you can see in the plot there,
yeah,
kind of like bridge into each other.
Yeah, it's rare. Like usually you see it kind of like diagonal, right? Like go from top right to the bottom right for that pitch breaks, right? The breakdown. This is like a line across. It's rare that you see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he has four pitches: the sinker, the sweeper, the cutter, and the splitter, and he kind of used them all evenly, I'd say. I guess he changes up usage depending on handedness. But his sinker usage is definitely one of the more interesting ones. Typically, you want to keep your sinker low to lower, I guess, to induce ground balls. Mm-hmm. But he actually kind of leaves it high, which has led to a pretty high walk rate, specifically for a sinker. It's up to 30%. Whiff rate. 30% whiff rate this year, which is really impressive. But it has pretty poor results this season. As you mentioned, his FIP's pretty high. He's given up a lot of home runs, likely due to that high sinker approach. Just typically you want the sinker down low. You don't really want the sinker dropping down right into the plane of the bat, especially in the heart of the zone. But again, he's not getting too many chases, but his sweeper, I do like his sweeper, how he approaches right-handed hitters, kind of gets low and away. It's able to induce a lot of weak contact, not many chases, but he's able to get it kind of in the zone. Has a 27 CSW percentage this year, not too high, but again, great results on that. He has some very poor results when he's throwing that sweeper to left-handed hitters. You typically would want to use kind of his splitter against them, but again, he's given up two. With his sweeper, he's given up two batted balls, and they've both been absolutely crushed to left-handed hitters, so don't really like seeing that. But again, that bridging, the tunneling between his all his pitches is really interesting to see. And if he gets moved, I heard that there was a rumor that he may get moved at the deadline. Definitely more encouraging, definitely more chances for wins as well. Hopefully a better defensive team than the White Sox. But Fetty, I think around a 4 ERA could fit him in well. I think the home run issues, if he doesn't kind of lower that sinker, they might still persist. But he does have an arsenal that can both deal with righties and lefties. Again, it's just getting that feel for the splitter a bit more, and guess kind of not only using that sinker as your put away pitch. Because again, his other three pitches, they grade out about average, and I think they could definitely be, I guess, have better results than what they're showing right now.
That's, yeah, that's great insight. If any of our listeners are like me, they actually have held on to Fetty, and it's basically last chance saloon against the Guardians. But unfortunately, with the Guardians' handedness, they only have one righty in the lineup. Then there's a bunch of lefties and a switch hitter. So I think tomorrow will be, today, as you guys are listening on the podcast, will be a big test to see how he does with the Guardians, who are, they have the seventh highest OPS among lefties. And like you mentioned, Thomas, maybe some of his top pitches don't perform as well against lefties. So I think that'll be an interesting test. And for me, it's going to be sink or swim. If he gets roughed up, then it's time to move on. And, you know, hopefully the results look more like the two starts before that, and we actually got something here. So any closing thoughts on Fetty? Are you guys down to move to the next?
Yeah, let's go on to the next one.
All right. Well, Thomas, I want to hear you talk about Chris Paddock, because a few outings ago, he had 10 strikeouts and 7 scoreless innings, but it was against the White Sox. Then he's kind of been up and down a little bit, but tonight against the Mariners, 5 1/3 innings, got the win, 10 strikeouts, and gave up just one run. The whip was a little high, though. Paddock, we've liked just what the Twins pitching coaching has done in general. Kind of like Paddock last year before, or was it 2 years ago before the injury? And now this year, like, I'm trying to make sense of, you know, 2 10 strikeout outings over 4 or 5 starts. Normally that's a rush to add, but his ERA is really high because he gave up 9 runs against Baltimore. I'm curious what you see from a stuff standpoint with Paddock, and if you think this is kind of a rush to add or just someone to keep an eye on, because 14% rostered, he's pretty available.
And Paddock's start on Wednesday was pretty fascinating. 19 whiffs. The fastball had a 48% whiff rate. Definitely something very encouraging to see. The stuff, again, as similar to his prior starts, have been, I guess, around average, around 100, I would say. But it seemed like today he went a high fastball approach, so similar to someone like Joe Ryan, his teammate. And then it looked like he weaved in a bunch of changeups. And interestingly, he's a right-handed pitcher, so you want to see more against lefties. But he actually saw some pretty good results pitching them to righties today. So I guess weaving in more fastballs up and leaving his secondaries lower in the zone have probably led to a bit more success. I do see that his fastball grade has improved in the prior few starts compared to what it was before. I think a bit higher IVB on the fastball, again, could be more weather related, or park related factors. But it is encouraging to see those strikeouts today. Again, it's kind of been a rocky road for Paddock the last few years. Not a lot of games, played a lot of injuries, but definitely very encouraging to see the command be well, like low walk rate. And again, today, a really great outing against Seattle.
Steve, how do you make sense of it?
Yeah, I mean, when Paddock first came up with the Padres, right, he was kind of out of nowhere and like, he wasn't like a top end prospect, and then like he came up in spring training and like it was just assumed that he was going to be this stud pitcher, and he kind of was, at least for the first few years with San Diego, and it was because of that changeup, right? And he really only had the changeup and the fastball, and he kind of got by with it to both handedness, and it was a search to add something else. And like, there were so many articles on Chris Paddock's working on a curveball, Chris Paddock's working on a slider. And like, and he would say like that pitch helped, you know, led him losing the feel for the changeup and not as good results. So to see him get that changeup back, even though it may not make sense and be, you know, something that you want to throw to same handed hitters, or opposite handed hitters too. It's encouraging, because when Chris Paddock was really good, that was the pitch that was really good for him.
And sure, the fastball had a lot to do with it too, and there was a lot of talk about the spin rate. And I think Paddock's that year that Paddock had was 2019, when there was like the most sticky stuff ever. And there was like the Chris Paddock fastball spin rate watch. I always remember I was all over that when I had a bunch of shares of him, I think in 2021, and looking for him to get the spin rate back on that fastball. So I've always sort of been a fan of Chris Paddock, and I'm pretty encouraged. Like I know that there was a really bad start, but that was versus Baltimore, like the best offense in the league. It's two tough ones coming up, versus New York and then at Cleveland. So home against one of the best offenses, and then
Yankees.
Against the Yankees, and then at Cleveland, which I talked about how that's become a hitter's park, and the Cleveland's lineup's really good, and they have a bunch of lefties. I'm kind of waiting and seeing, so I don't the issue with that is, like, if he goes out and deals in both of those, like, he's gone. Like, he's not available.
You got to set a reminder to watch that in the third inning. And if he's dealing, go at him.
So, and he's done well enough that he may just get added today. Like, Seattle hasn't been a great offense, but the numbers sort of speak for itself. So, it may not be. I don't know if I fully buy it, but you may not have the time to – you may miss out on a breakout if you don't sort of move ahead. I forget what podcast I was listening to. I think it was DVR on Rates and Barrels, but he made a point where, like, sometime in order to add a guy or to trade for a guy, you need to make moves with incomplete information. And sort of use the tools that you have to take a risk and say, I believe in this guy because of X, Y, and Z. The surface numbers don't say it yet. Like, this is why. Like, that's how, like, buy lows sort of work, right? And what you need to do. Like, you know, I believe.
Leap,
like,
of faith.
Yeah. Like, I believe in Xander Bogaerts, even though he has a .215 average and one home run, because, you know, he is a .280 hitter with 20 home runs every year. Like, you know, obviously you can get much more technical than that, but that's the sort of things that you need to do.
Well, this has been great, and I know we're coming up on time. So to close out, Thomas, first of all, thank you again so much. We'll do a proper wrap here in a second, but for a guy like you who's just kind of living in the data and you're putting out all this fast content, curious if there's any name or a couple names that come to mind for you of someone truly flying, like, under the radar, like, even to Steve's point, if it's a leap of faith, you know, and it's like in the past there's been like a Steven Matz where it's like, oh, the results aren't even there, but I really think this pitcher's onto something. Putting you on the spot a little bit, but is there anybody across your teams or as you've been digging in to guys in box scores that you think, like, this is kind of an interesting pitcher, even though maybe their surface level numbers haven't been, like, as impressive?
Yeah, there's I guess I'll start with a prospect, David Festa of the Twins. His stuff plus numbers are popping up in AAA. I saw, you know, Sarah's made a tweet. He's near the top in his model as well. I'm not sure if he'll get the chance this year, at least an extended chance, but he's striking out a ton of players in AAA right now. His walk rate is kind of high, but it's kind of been a bit more, he's kind of had kept that in check a bit more. So definitely an interesting thing to see if the Twins have an opening in their rotation. Nice. I know Simeon Woods Richardson, I guess, is also another name I can mention. He had a really great start a few days ago. His fastball is looking great. Mackenzie Gore, I really like what he's doing this season. Kind of got hit hard by the Jays a few days ago. But again, that fastball, I would say, is elite. It's a fantastic pitch. Just not, I guess his secondaries are still kind of, he's still trying to work on those, tinker with them, fit them in. But again, a really good fastball is a great foundation for any pitcher, and it seems like he's commanding it well. Christopher Sanchez, he actually leads my TJ Stuff Plus metric for all starting pitchers. And again, he had a great start against Toronto yesterday. He's had some command issues this year, not getting all the chases or all the whiffs, but sometimes he comes out and absolutely shoves, and sometimes he just can't aim and can't hit the zone, but that changeup sinker combination is some of the best, I guess I would say, in baseball. I just like watching him pitch, and it absolutely fools batters. I don't really have too many other guys to
I'm
cover.
Sure you do. I mean,
those are some names.
Yeah, I was selfishly just staying quiet over here and jotting these names down so I can go target them in my leagues and everything. But yeah, this was awesome. Steve, I'll let you give closing thoughts here before we wrap up.
No, I just want to give Thomas a chance to plug his work again, anything you're working on, whatever you need to do to promote yourself here. And it would be an injustice to our listeners, because you are a great follower, full of amazing information, put out amazing work. So just want to leave that opportunity to you here at the end of the show, just to plug your work.
Yeah. So yeah, my name is Thomas Nestico. You can find me on Twitter at TJ Stats. You can find me on Patreon, TJ_Stats. I got a lot of pitching summaries. Every single thing you see, I share. It's basically available on my Patreon. All those pitching summaries, all those heat maps. I'm working on some more depth. I'm always kind of working on some graphics like scatter plots, like difference tables, kind of see how a pitcher's performed. Say you want to see how the pitcher performed from the beginning of March to the end of April, and how they performed since the beginning of May to now. I'm working on a project for that. Definitely a bunch of other things I have. Statcast data for minor leagues. I get minor league pitching summaries. If there is Statcast data, that is available as well. So again, some you've seen Paul Skeen's summary, that's available to my patrons. Other work I have are my batter cards. Those are very popular. Kind of gives you a glimpse of the batter, kind of like a savant-esque type of thing, but more, I guess, condensed in the nice format with the picture, some graphs. I just like making it all nice and readable, and I've had great feedback, great, I guess, compliments on my work as well. So again, you find me at TJ Stats. Everything's there. I have a whole thread of what's available on my Patreon, and again, you can hopefully check it out. Support, I'd be very greatly appreciated.
Awesome. Yeah, second that, and we very much appreciate you coming on, Thomas. This was a blast, and it's great to meet people around the industry. It always is. It seems like everyone has such a positive perspective on collaborating and teaming up, and it's just there's nothing better than talking baseball, especially with people who have unique backgrounds like yourself and awesome skill sets and expertise. So thank you so much for coming on, and again, Steve, shout out for making it happen, because you put this together on short notice. So hopefully all you listeners enjoyed this one. As always, you guys can reach out to us with topics, guests, questions, anything like that. We'll be sure to tag Thomas in the show when we tweet it out, and otherwise we'll be back per usual throughout the regular season every Thursday. But on behalf of Steve Giswelli and Thomas Nestico, I'm Van Burnett. That's episode 138 of Wins Above Fantasy. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for taking the time, Thomas. Thanks for listening, guys. Later.